Ladies and gentlemen, we have a correction. This contest has been judged a majority draw.
I knocked out the baddest welterweight in the world in record-breaking time, and I don't get the respect I deserve.
I want to fight for your chicken, because this is number one easy fight in lightweight division.
Yeah, trust me, dude, I'm fucking machine now. You have no idea what you're dealing with. You just woke me up.
You keep laughing. I'm the new John Wick.
Dana White, bring me somebody that can beat me. I got 200K. You can't find nobody that can beat me. Take me up on the bet, Dana.
We lost, by the way, but,
what?
You know.
Guys, I'm sorry. No. There's a mistake. Moonlight, you guys won Best Picture.
What's happening?
I am watching Khabib fight.
How's that?
Terrifying.
I've seen a lot of talk about, one fight, his first fight, Gleison Tibau. People are saying he lost that fight. Do you think he lost that fight? Is that revisionist history?
It was kind of a toss-up type of deal, but...
You think that was just because it was his first fight, some jitters, or what do you think happened there?
Tibau was always one of those feast or famine guys, and he's tough, and yeah, your first fight, not just jitters, but you don't have to be as good as you are now all the time. Like, he can slowly be getting better. Like, we see that with Tony Ferguson, too. So, you know, yeah, guys do improve, especially when it seems like he's improving on what are his strengths. He's not adding something totally out of left field. He's just getting better and better at what he does. So,
right. So welcome to MMA and Stuff on HalfGuarded.com. You can actually listen to the show various ways now. We're available on iTunes and Google Play, I believe.
Yep, and hopefully SoundCloud when I can figure that out.
Someday.
Will never come.
I am Matt Grady, and this lovely gentleman is Michael Coughlin, hailing from Illinois. This week we will be discussing George St. Pierre versus Michael Bisping for the UFC middleweight championship, Holly Holm losing another fight, Dominic Cruz on the Joe Rogan Experience, more USADA failures, headbutting cars, UFC 209, and if time allows, probably some stuff as well. So last Friday, February 24th from the SSE Arena, when we had Bellator 173. Do you remember this show, Mike?
The one with...
I'll tell you about it.
Was it Liam McGeary?
Yes! It was a well-attended show in Ireland. They do like their MMA over there. Bellator drew over 10,000 people for this show and did a gate of $980,000 American. So that's very good for... little old Bellator. The main event saw Liam McGeary beat Brett Don't Call Me Dylan McDermott in a catchweight fight at 217 pounds by TKO at a minute six in the first round. I'm sorry, in the second round. The fight was stopped due to a cut above McDermott's eye. McDermott took this fight on short notice, and that's why it was that funky weight at 217. He rocked McGeary early in the first, but couldn't deal with McGeary's reach as the fight kind of progressed. After the fight, it was announced that McGeary would be fighting Linton Vassell next at Bellator 179, and no one cared. In the semi-main event, an Irish guy named James Gallagher. He's a featherweight. I think he's like 20 years old.
Oh, yeah, I saw him. He looks like he's in grade school.
Yeah, he looks oddly young. But I guess he's 20. He's training out of Conor McGregor's camp there, SBG. And he beat a guy nobody's ever heard of, Kirill Medvedovsky, with a rear naked choke at 253 in the first round. The thing I noticed with him was he tried to cut a fun promo after. He called out AJ McKee, of all people, another young fighter kind of on the rise in Bellator a little bit. But Gallagher looked decent. Obviously, he's green, he's young, but he showed a little star potential. Otherwise, the rest of that card was kind of a throwaway.
Yeah, well, I mean, even big Bellator cards, most of the card is a throwaway. But, hey, you know, good for them if they can... I think they should just run more of Europe. You know, they seem to be doing it more and more, and there's a huge market of people that really want it, and just, you know, you can still be in the United States here and there, but it's kind of like what TNA would go to Europe, and they'd do these really good crowds, and I just thought, why even bother being here? Like, the TV show can be taped anywhere these days, so just go to the place where you look like you're a real hot product. And, yeah. You know, if you're Bellator, you don't need to go to the Mohegan Sun the 37th time in a row that year. Just, yeah, go to... I mean, I know it's a little more expensive, but you're not really paying these guys anything anyway, so who cares?
Yeah, and I mean, especially it seems like the UFC is kind of pulling back from some of their, you know, global domination expansion plans. I mean, I know they've still got that show in Singapore, and they're doing a show in Sweden, so there's still some, but you feel like they're more... you know, U.S.-based a little bit more now than they were a year or two ago.
Yeah,
but
that's fair. And I think it's probably in large part because they have New York now.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, that's going to – it's going to be expensive to run there, and it's such a new market. And you can see they're just running tons of shows in New York. It seems like every fight's now either New York or Vegas, and that's it.
Yeah, I think when it became legalized, part of that bill was the UFC guaranteed them four shows a year. And obviously those four shows have to come from somewhere. So from a cost perspective, you think they might pull some of those overseas shows. They might just pull four overseas shows because, you know, the travel and who knows what the taxes are like or however all that pans out. But it's just going to cost more money to ship everything over to Europe than it would cost to, you know, truck it to New York.
Of course, they are putting on that show in London, and with just one shit fucking awful main event. So,
oh, what was that main event?
I think it's Corey Anderson versus what's his face, the British big black guy.
Not Tahuna.
Tahuna.
No, but he came up like the same time as Tahuna. They were both. I know who you're talking about. I can't think of his name either. Shit. I'm not going to figure it out either. Yes, I will. He beat OSP, knocked out OSP, right? What is that guy's name?
It's not Liam McGeary.
This is bad. This is really bad.
He was like in the top 10 at one point too, although he really wasn't. I think Shogun ran through him. And this is riveting audio, by the way.
People. I just want to see who's going to get it first.
Shit.
Jimmy Manua.
Oh, yeah, that's it. Now I can see where you got Tahuna from.
Yeah.
It is kind of a very... That's an Islander's name. Go to your proper place. Go back to...
Wow, Jimmy Manua is 37.
Jeez.
And one of his nicknames is Poster Boy. All right. Big news today was that Dana White announced on ESPN that George St. Pierre will be challenging Michael Bisping for the middleweight title in the second half of 2017. So sometime after, I guess that would mean July 1st, this will be GSP's first fight in 3 years and his first fight ever at 185 pounds. Obviously, Bisbing's probably...
Tell us your thoughts on this, Matt. I know you're very happy about this fight.
I have an opinion on this one. Here's the thing. To me, it's kind of a gift for Bisbing. He's wanted a big money fight, and this is a big money fight. George St. Pierre has always been a huge draw for the UFC, and Bisbing hasn't had a lot of, you know, 500,000 plus buy paydays in his career. He's actually had zero.
Didn't we see that he was like the number two highest paid fighter by disclosed pay?
That I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised just based on his longevity and how long he's been on top.
It was like $6 million. Either that or I've imagined things in a fever dream once again.
Well, I think he's got the most wins in UFC history. I know that. He's probably almost up there with the most fights as well, I would presume, because he's lost a few too. But anyway, it's a big money fight for him, and he's fighting a guy with a name who's been out of the sport for 3 years and is the much smaller fighter in GSP. I mean, Bisping's fought at 205 pounds. He fought at 205 for years. And he's now fighting GSP, who says he can make 155. But, okay. It's also a fight that GSP must have wanted as well, obviously. GSP could become the fourth fighter in UFC history to hold two championships in two different weight classes. You know, the BJ Penn, Randy Couture, and obviously Conor McGregor deal. But I don't like this fight, and there's a few reasons. One, it's not a huge drawing fight. Like, you can assume that this fight was kind of booked as a cash grab, considering GSP has never fought in the division. He hasn't fought in 3 years, and the UFC needs money. They're trying to make a quick buck here, and they think this will draw. But I still think GSP versus Nick Diaz does just as well at the box office. I think GSP versus the winner of Woodley and Thompson could be big as well. And I also think GSP versus Anderson Silva would likely draw as well, if not better than this Bisping fight. Second, there's a big size difference between GSP and Bisping. Like I said, he used to fight at 205, and GSP's talked about fighting at 155. GSP also said for years that he was too small for 185 and refused to fight Anderson Silva back when GSP was in his prime and active, you know, 6-7 years ago. Third, there's a line of deserving contenders at 185. And usually I don't have a problem with booking the money fight. But again, I don't think this is the money fight. And on top of it, you've got Yoel Romero, who, like a lot of guys, was promised a title shot and isn't going to get it now. But you've also got guys like Jacare, Rockhold, Weidman, and Mousasi, all guys who you would probably really favor to beat GSP. It's like, even if GSP beats Bisping, then he'd have to fight one of those guys. You would think he'd probably defend against one of them in theory. Who knows what they'll actually end up doing. But if GSP wins the middleweight title, I don't like his chances against Yoel Romero. But whatever. So to me, merit doesn't mean much in this fight. There's a huge size difference. It's not even the best drawing fight. And this fight isn't even going to be a good action fight, I wouldn't think. If anything, Bisping's just going to jab GSP for 5 rounds. Like, there's no redeeming qualities to this fight whatsoever. Thank you.
Wow. All right. That's, you know, next time, just tell us how you really feel. Don't hold back.
It's a sucky fight. Like, and maybe I'm getting jaded from WME, IMG, and the Holly Holm Rondemy fight, and some of the fights they've put together. I'm jumping the gun here, but it's just like, come on. Like, the fight doesn't make sense on any level, whether it's money, merit, whatever. Maybe GSP and Bisping both really wanted it, and Dana's like, oh, we'll throw him a bone. It's a big money fight for Bisping, and GSP wants it. But it's like, I don't know. This fight does nothing for me.
It was one of the fights that I think was kind of like up in the air for GSP's return.
Yeah.
So it didn't come out of left field. And in that sense, it's not like it's a horrible decision, because they could have done something really horrible and had him fight. Actually, they should have had him face CM Punk. But, I mean, it does suck for the middleweights. The middleweights in particular, it really sucks for. The only person I don't have a lot of sympathy for is Yoel Romero, just because he's such a cheater in so many ways. But, yeah. There are so many really great fights at middleweight that I want to see. I want to see all those guys fight each other numerous times because they're just so, so talented. And, you know, Bisping's
right. Would you even give GSP a chance against any of those guys, like those top 5 or 6 guys? I would. At this point, now at 37, out for 3 years, it's like...
Maybe Mousasi, because I'm not sold on Mousasi as being consistently great.
Yeah, but do you see, like, GSP still being able to take, like, Mousasi down, like, at this stage with both his ACLs blown out? It's like, maybe GSP says he's feeling better than he ever has, which every fighter says before every fight. But it's like, has he gotten better in the last 3 years? It's like, he probably should have lost that fight to Hendricks that went to the scorecards. And we see where Hendricks is at now. Where's GSP going to be at? You know, I don't know. I would have liked to see him fight, like, again, and I know I'm harping on this, Nick Diaz, because they've both been off. They both fight in that division. There's a feud there. There's money to be made there. And if one guy wins, then you can give him a title shot in either division. If GSP want to go to 185 after that, so be it. At least he's got a win, and they made some money. Or he could go fight at 172. This fight is just so, like, it just reeks again of desperation on their part.
I think the answer can almost lie in the fact that they didn't do all of those things. You know, they're not stupid. I mean, they want to make the most money.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they're making a fight, this is the fight they think is going to make the most money. I don't think that they're that stupid, but, you know, there's just so many factors at play. A Diaz brother is always a wild card. And, you know, GSP, he might have, you know, if I'm GSP, this is probably the best fight in some respects for me to come back to, in that it has the highest ratio, like, plus a good balance of financial reward and also, you know, legacy reward. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, if he fights Nick Diaz, it's all money. There's no legacy. It doesn't matter. If he fights, you know, Tyrone Woodley, it's pretty much all legacy, no money. So it's kind of a risk.
Do you think his return does a million buys no matter who he fights?
Probably. I mean, I think he would need somebody, but there's so many guys in those divisions that he'd probably do fine with any of them. I mean, you know, Woodley wouldn't be a big deal, but it would do fine, but it wouldn't be, you know, it wouldn't have the heat of, you know, Nick Diaz. And then if you're Bisping, you look at if you're St. Pierre, you look at Michael Bisping, and that really does have the nicest balance, because it's going to be a pretty big fight as far as names are concerned, and you get that legacy thing with the two titles. So if you're Bisping, you know, you have a chance to make almost as much money as you would with maybe, you know, Diaz, but you also get to add a layer to your legacy that you wouldn't otherwise have. So I can see where St. Pierre would think this might be a decent fight for him to take. And plus, if he loses, he can just say, hey, it was in a big weight class. It's almost a freebie. He'll always have the ability to come down and draw at 170 for the first fight back at 170 if he wants. So, I mean, yeah, as far as how he's going to do, I don't know. It's really, it's weird. Like, it's not, you know, Dominic Cruz had basically half a decade off, and he came back. But,
mm-hmm. but he was also 10 years younger when he did it.
He was also younger, but more than that, he was injured. And in a weird way, being injured is the reason that you're out of the sport for a while. Might be better for your odds of winning your return fight, as opposed to St. Pierre, who just sat it out because he didn't feel it. Well, because if you're injured, as soon as you're done healed, you can go out and you still have that drive and desire that you need to, you know, take yourself to the next level. But if you lose your smile, like St. Pierre has done here, you lose your drive and desire. Yeah, you might be physically fine, but I think it's more difficult to get yourself mentally back to that state of real hunger, unless, you know, you're Rocky and you lose it all or something. But otherwise, you know, when you're rich and successful, it's such a tough sport. You know, who wants to go out and run 5 miles a day and do two-a-day training and all this stuff, put yourself through hell, when you've already at one point in your life shown that you can make peace without it? So, I don't know. But it's St. Pierre. He's always been a weirdo, and it doesn't probably really matter because he's just a weirdo.
Do you like GSP's chances in that fight? Because I don't. I see him getting, I shouldn't say manhandled, but like Bisping's takedown defense has improved a lot. And standing is just like Bisping's so much bigger than GSP. I just see GSP getting lit up, not lit up, but like I said earlier, just jabbed to death for five rounds, where he's not going to be quick enough or big enough where he can really get in there and still take Bisping down. Bisping's, again, his takedown defense isn't great, but I don't think GSP's Luke Rockhold and is going to be able to take him down and just maul him on the ground.
No, it won't be easy for St. Pierre at all. He'd be at a number of disadvantages, and his size is pretty much, you know, number one with a bullet. But I can see in the... I mean, he had trouble, the story goes, in training with Chael Sonnen, and that was always one of the reasons why he wouldn't move up to middleweight. Now, granted, Chael's a different type of wrestler than Bisping, but mm-hmm. I think, you know, there is probably some truth to that. And Bisping is a very good counter-wrestler. Again, St. Pierre, to his credit, he has been a takedown artist like almost nobody has in MMA history, and maybe he'll be a little faster and can surprise things. Otherwise, on the feet, I think it would just be a point fighting match. You know, it's what St. Pierre does these days. He's just going to sit there and jab and kick, because that's probably the safest way for him to get a victory, is to dart in and out, because you can't handle any of the power, and you don't want to waste your time trying to wrestle. So you just do what he's always done. So he might be able to win, but it would probably be a boring fight, and people would be going, oh, god damn, like, GSP's become basically the Floyd Mayweather of MMA.
Hate this fight. Changing gears. I know, obviously, I wasn't around last week. The kids were sick. I was sick. Everybody was crying and miserable. But 2 weeks ago,
I only said that you were sick. I didn't mention your kids.
Well, they were the more sick ones.
I wasn't going to mention something about your children on air without you doing it. I'm not a monster.
Debatable. So, yeah, my son had, like, a fever for 7 days in a row. It was great. He was in a good mood.
Is that safe?
Well, we got it down with, like, Tylenol and stuff. We took him to the doctor twice, and they tested him for the flu, and they did, like, a strep test. He didn't have the flu. He didn't have strep. My daughter was up and down with a fever for, like, 6 days. It was crazy. They're better now.
Fry the brain? Like,
it wasn't that high. It was, like you know, 99, 100, that sort of thing.
Yeah, but still, but like, it's not healthy.
No, it's not good. My kids were sick. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. I guess that is what it means to be sick. I don't really think these things through all the time. Like, oh, yeah, your body's in danger. It's not well. Yeah.
So she was out of school a few days, and they weren't sleeping. It was just a mess. But 2 weeks ago when we were talking, we mentioned Misha Surkunov, and Dana said, you know what, I had dinner with him and his wife. He's not coming back. He's done. But now he's back. Dana said today, I'm not sure if it was on ESPN, but he did a few interviews. The other big news, not quite as big as GSP's return, but Misha Surkunov is back, undefeated in the UFC light heavyweight. They got a deal done, Dana said. So Dana
is awesome. He is so totally Donald Trump in so many ways. Just like, he's saying one thing one day, he's doing the exact opposite the next day. Like, he throws out these, I mean, Dana's really always been that way, you know. Every day, you have no idea what's happening. Like, he'll think, oh, that guy's an unreasonable piece of I'm never going to deal with him again. And the next day, he just turns around and is like, no, this guy's really great. I love him. We got a deal done. There's no problem. Like, I think you got to learn how to deal with this fact that he's an emotional baby, but otherwise, you're good.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people will claim Dana's a liar because of stuff like this. But I don't know if he lies. I think he fully, at the time, probably believed he was done with Surkunov. And then, you know what, Surkunov came back, whatever, apologized, tail between his legs. Sorry, I'll take the deal. Can we still make this happen? And Dana's like, all right. You know what I mean? I don't think – like, Dana's got this rep of being the shady, lying promoter. And I still, to this day, think he's more honest than most people would be in his position. And I think when he's hyping a fight and he's excited for a fight, he really is excited for it. I don't think he's just some con man, liar, carny scumbag like he's portrayed by a lot of people. But this is another one of those cases where it gives people more fuel to add onto that fire.
I think you nailed it, though, when you say, you know, in that moment, Dana believes it. Like, he's not doing these things as, like, I want to publicly humiliate the guy. It's just like, all right, he doesn't want to talk. We're done. We got nothing to go with. Let's move on. He's just saying that matter-of-factly, and that's what it is. And I think he does it with everybody. Like, he knows in his mind he's got an idea of a price point for every fighter. And so when Conor McGregor says things like I want points in the company, Dana just goes, no, it just no matter what, never, I'm done. And Dana, I think, is very much like, it's done. Like, he knows, again, what the negotiating breakpoint is. And if you're at that level, he's just like, okay, fine. He's got 1,000 other things to do. He's not sitting there worrying about any fighter, even Conor, or maybe Conor, but that's like half of the 1,000 things he's got to do is deal with Conor's weird shit that day. But otherwise, Dana's not that Machiavellian. He's just, he's Dana. It's just, yeah. That's the only way to describe him. He's Dana.
The one thing I saw, again, that struck me as funny was that whatever the report was, wherever I read it, was that Dana met with Serkinov and his wife again over dinner and got the deal done. Like, that's so odd to me because it's like Dana doesn't usually do contracts, especially I don't want to say Serkinov's a mid-level guy, but nobody really knows him. And it's like he met them again, and Serkinov brings his wife to this dinner. Like, I just can't picture it. It just sounds weird to me, and every time I read it, I laugh.
Maybe it is abnormal, and Dana doesn't do that all the time, but, like, Serkinov made a big deal out of it. Like, I want to do this and be polite and respectful to boss or something like that. And Dana was just like, oh, I'm going to play along with the mongoloid here, and I'll see what the guy...
Don't forget he's Canadian.
Oh, fuck, that's right, he is Canadian. Oh, well, he's a mongoloid.
Yes.
Or, if he's Canadian, it works all the same. It's the same stupid politeness. It'd be the same joke if they're Canadian. So, whatever. Or maybe,
what happened?
Maybe
what Dana, happened? Sorry.
I was just, maybe Dana really does go out to dinner with, like, a different fighter every day of the year.
You feel like you would have heard about that by now after... 15 years. But what was that? I saw you posted something on halfguarded.com about that Canadian jiu-jitsu tournament or something. They canceled it or something because they figured out jiu-jitsu was illegal.
Yeah. In Montreal, the city where George St. Pierre had one of his most memorable professional cage fighting victories as he beat and bloodied a man in front of, like, 22,000 people. But Montreal, the hometown of George St. Pierre, Montreal basically forced the cancellation of a Brazilian jiu-jitsu tournament because the Canadian code, criminal code, says that no, you can't do any combat sport unless it's an Olympic combat sport. And then they list off a bunch of them, and I presume it must have been you can't go out there and get in, like, a street fight and then claim that it's a combat sport or something. I don't know what the hell it would be, but maybe there's a lot of problems, like people eye gouging each other in fight. I don't know, but they basically informed the promoters of the jiu-jitsu tournament that We're going to consider you a combat sport because it is kind of a combat sport and you're not in the Olympics. I have no idea what their interpretation was, because if it's a combat sport, then it would be governed by the fucking athletic commission there that they have, the one that allows extra points on the scale. So I have no idea what's going on with that.
But how is MMA legal?
That's what I get. That's what I'm saying. It's like, if that first one is the law, and then they have a second law for maybe just MMA.
Right. Like, they made an exception, because there was one province in Canada that only got legalized a year or two ago. Like, not Ontario, but some Western Canadian province just made it legal in the last couple of years. So maybe it's a province-by-province sort of thing?
Yeah, I'm sure they have an overarching, laws for the country, and it may just be every province goes through and can write their own addendum or whatever. But I don't know. It's just it's bureaucracy, and what it really is there's probably somebody knows what it should be, but the cop is like, look, this is what the law says. I got to do it. I give me a court order, but otherwise, I'm not going to risk. Being the guy that gets in trouble for sanctioning a street fight, it's more an indictment on bureaucracies in general than it is anything.
Blame Justin Trudeau. Speaking of commissions, the New York State Athletic Commission denied Holly Holm's appeal of her UFC 208 loss to Jermaine de Rondamy. If you remember that fight, Holm took some tough shots after the horn sounded at the end of the second round and again at the end of the third. A lot of people thought that Rondamy should have been docked at least 1 point for, you know, the infractions. But she wasn't, and then went on to win the fight by unanimous decision, 3-2. So if Rondamy had lost a point for those strikes after the bell, she would have been in a draw. Or even worse, if she was docked 2 points, she would have lost the fight. So that was the basis of Holmes' appeal to the Athletic Commission. Hey, she should have been penalized for this. The fight should have been a draw, or it should have been a win for me. The New York State Athletic Commission did not see it that way, and basically told her to go fuck herself. So were you surprised by the Athletic Commission's decision, or did you expect this?
Well, it is an athletic commission. They're getting worse these days. So I'm surprised that she didn't just like have to pay like a $2,000 fee. And then they say, okay, yeah, you're done. The fight's been overturned. Because it seemed to work with Kelvin Gastelum.
Right.
I mean, I really, really hope that the idea of the appeal is just like a basic sheet of paper that anybody can fill out. Because it would just break my heart to think that she spent any degree of money on this. If she really like hired like an attorney to do all this, oh my gosh, what an absolute criminal waste of her time and money. Like, that's so stupid. Anybody with half a brain would know that she's never going to win this. And if she did, that would be one of the worst things I've ever heard of. It would be so stupid. So just shut up, preacher's daughter, and you're done. You were exposed as being able to beat one chick.
Yeah. Yeah. Her, she's not going to have much. She could be Buster Douglas. She really could be. When it's all said and done. Because she beat, you know, this monster in Ronda Rousey, and then the rest of her career kind of sputtered out and really didn't go anywhere.
And hell, Ronda plays a pretty good Mike Tyson in a way. Like, after absolutely. Her loss, ooh, that's a pretty good idea for an article. You should write that.
Yeah. You're right, I should. I also need to get a haircut. Hey, Mike, you know what time it is?
Oh, time for me to have to hit the pause on the recording thing so I can insert it later.
It's USADA time.
This is 5 fucking stars!
It's USADA news.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's USADA.
I'm not
everybody's
doing this.
Type
I'm, not,
of the-
I'm not doing this shit anymore. There's got to be an easier way for me to do this and to intersplace it like this.
You could. I don't know why you hang up on me every time you have to do it, but that's
it's
okay.
Just, it's just easier to edit, just to put in track one. The bite.
Instead of trying to find what time it actually was?
Yeah. Right.
Either way, I think this is both our favorite times of the week. So we've got three. Two of them are a little older, and I'll be honest, I didn't listen to your entire show last week, but the kids were sick. You got to give me a little slack. So we had two retroactive TUEs, and we also have the suspension of Filthy Tom Lawler. But I think we'll hit the TUEs up first. So Chris Cyborg was granted a retroactive TUE for her use of an illegal diuretic. She claimed that she had health issues from her severe weight cut that necessitated her taking spironolactone. This means with this retroactive TUE, this means she's eligible to fight anytime. She could sign a deal and fight next month if she felt like she could make 145 and is healthy and everything. So it seems that a title fight with Rondamy is next for her. Obviously, there's some baggage here and issues because she eventually popped for an illegal substance and then after the fact went to USADA and said, hey, I was taking this because I've got this medical condition and I need it for my health. In normal circumstances, you're supposed to go to USADA beforehand and get this sort of thing okayed. And she didn't. And they're basically saying, don't sweat it. Does this rub you the wrong way at all, or am I a crazy person?
This is fucking stupid.
Okay, it's, good.
Like, there are going to be times when it's, in the name of fairness, okay to grant a retroactive therapeutic use exemption. If it's something where, like, an athlete, it, like, could actually show using an asthma inhaler or something like that, or, you know, some innocuous product where you just, you wouldn't be thinking twice about it. And people,
but, like, at this stage, don't you think everybody's thinking about it? Shouldn't you be thinking about this? Like, what, like, it's just crazy. But with all, every week we do this. Every week there's some sort of failure or some weird story, or Lyoto Machida writes on his form that he's taken 7 keto, and you can get it at GNC, and he gets suspended for 2 years, and he wrote it on the form and wasn't aware there was an issue with it, and he gets suspended for 2 years. She takes this, doesn't tell them, pops for it, and gets nothing.
Oh, no, it's a joke. This specific case is a joke. I mean, I'm just saying there may be times in some other circumstances where a retroactive TUE is appropriate, but hers this is embarrassing. She's failed for steroids before. If she's known for anything in the sport, it's having issues keeping her weight down, and she gets popped for a diuretic. Like, what the fuck? This is insane. It'd be like, you know, if John Jones gets popped for cocaine, and then somebody's like, oh, okay, it really wasn't cocaine. Like, what? No, like, don't be surprised. This is what she does. And for them to buy the excuse, it's so hilarious. Because I was talking to Tony, and it was basically like, talk about Tom Lawler got 2 years. Because he didn't even really challenge it. He didn't have a lawyer. He didn't do any of that shit. He got 2 years. Meanwhile, John Jones and Anderson Silva both used the same excuse, and it worked. And now,
well, it really didn't. They both still got the full suspension.
No, well, John Jones got the suspension. Whatever. They still got less than 2. If they had not said anything, they probably would have got 2.
Right. And, but I think, again, that's based on what the drug is. Because there's a different level of, you know, anabolic principles or whatever. So some, like, both Anderson and Jones did get the full 1 year suspension.
Then why did Jones?
Whether or not you think the clomiphene or whatever should be a 2 year suspension is whatever open to debate.
No,
I guess
that can't be right, because why would Jones fight it and why would he be happy with the decision? Like, the way it was framed and told everybody, everybody's like, okay, we all came together, we agreed on this, everybody's moving forward, like. It didn't seem like he was unhappy, so he must have been up for 2 years.
No, he wasn't. I don't think he was. But maybe,
the point overall is that they're just believing any bullshit excuse.
That I agree with.
And, like, that's why it makes it so stupid, like, Tom Lawler doesn't do it. It's like, dude, they're just begging you for something. All you had to do was say, I went to the gas station and got some dick pills. And the commissions apparently live in the world where, well, I mean, why would anybody lie about this? This is clearly what happened, and thank you for your honesty there, Mr. John Jones. You're a model citizen. Don't drink and drive. And so if you get busted for anything and you get the full sentence, you got to really just be a horrible fuck up. Mr. Chad Mendez, who I thought he had, like, the asthma inhaler excuse, and it seemed kind of legit, and then they gave him 2 years.
Yeah, he had some sort of cream or something. He was, like, for eczema or something.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah. And it was something nerdy.
I'm still pretty sure it was a one-year suspension, and he got the full suspension, but I'd have to research it a little bit. Either way, yeah, I don't like the cyborg exemption. I don't think it makes a lot of sense, but again, I don't work for USADA. Then a second retroactive TUE kind of was which you were talking about was granted last week for Jean Valente, a UFC light heavyweight. He was given one for an inhaler, which is going to allow him to fight Shogun at UFC Fight Night 106. USADA officials said that Valente declared his use of Brio Ellipta, which is an inhaler, during an out-of-competition urine test conducted on January 18th. He subsequently tested positive for its active ingredient, Vilanterol, which is prohibited at all times by USADA under the beta-2 agonists category. So essentially, they came to test him, and he said, I'm using an inhaler, and then he tested positive for the drug that was in the inhaler, and they said, don't sweat it.
Maybe it's fair and legit, because I don't have an inhaler. I've never had one. I've never had breathing problems like that. But there's some part of me, like when Brock Lesnar was going to claim that at one point, it's like, if you can't, like, train without an inhaler, maybe you shouldn't be fighting. Like, you don't get to use an inhaler in the middle of the ring. Like, that's kind of like, I really can't play professional football because I can't see because I'm blind. I wear glasses. Like, sorry. I shouldn't, like, learn to, you know, run with my head in a different direction to protect my glasses. I don't know. Like, you're not physically healthy enough to do the sport. Sorry.
Yeah. And, I mean, the other thing that was weird with the Valente one was this wasn't one that they released and said he was potentially going to be suspended like they do with everyone else. Like, they kept this one under wraps for some reason. So there's creeping into this is a lot of consistency issues with how they arbitrate these things and how they release them to the press, because this just came out that he was granted a TUE, and that's it. They didn't say Jean Valente tested positive and he could face a potential suspension of 1 year or 2 years because of this. They kind of waited to see how it played out and essentially gave him a pass, which, again, I'm not claiming Jean Valente's juicing. He could be, but I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is it's, again, another inconsistency with USADA where it's like they got to get their shit together a little bit more, I think.
Yeah, this joke, what I don't get is why weren't Jean Valente and Cyborg eligible to fight pending their appeal? They did that before. That dude was on appeal for like a whole year and fought three times.
The Russian guy.
Yeah. Shouldn't that be the new standard? Why is some people going to fight when they're on an appeal and other people don't? That's crap.
Yeah. And the thing is, I don't think this gets a lot of press because unless you're a weirdo like you or I, and which is a very small percentage of the population, most people don't even hear about these cases. Or if they see it, they see a headline and don't think twice about it. But when you add it all up, just like the Machida one, these two, the Russian dude we were talking about a couple weeks ago, Jones, just all of them, it's like they're so inconsistent and so scattered. And the clenbuterol stuff where they're eating whatever cow in Mexico and they pop for it, or Chinese guys eating tainted meat. It's just like how they process all these failures is just, I don't know. Granted, it's still new, and I know they're working out the kinks or whatever, but it's like, at this point, they should be getting it together. It's been a year and a half or whatever.
Yeah, it's a good idea for a column. I should probably look into it. I felt the shit in my throat. I was just like, it's going to take, oh, damn it. I thought I was hoping it passed, but it did not.
Finally, we have Filthy Tom Lawler. He was suspended for 2 years by USADA because he tested positive for Osterine. Lawler claims that he's innocent, that he didn't take anything, but he couldn't determine how the substance got into his system. On various shows, I know he's talked about this on Observer a few times and on the MMA Hour this past week, but he's talking like he got it in a smoothie but can't prove it.
He said that again and again?
He said it several times.
Okay,
yes.
Because I wasn't sure if that was public or not. And right now, in the back of my head, I'm like, is that out there?
Okay, yeah, that's
so,
out there.
So he's actually – that's even worse. Like, it was one thing he said in private.
I'm not an info leak.
Well, just like sitting there, like, but think about how bad that is. Like, he thinks this is a good excuse. I got steroids in my body from Jamba Juice. That's the worst excuse. You're not even trying. That's worse than dick pill from Thailand. Because I can believe that a man would go to any lengths and take any pill from anywhere to get his dick working. That's fine. I can kind of buy that, but this is stupid. Jamba Juice.
Yeah. So I mean. I think Lawler would be like 35 and a half by the time he could come back to fight again. And he was fighting at light heavyweight. He was smaller. He was having trouble making 185. So he might be done. The guy with the best ring entrances in the business might be retired.
Yep, because he's a moron.
What would you have suggested he do?
I don't know. Anything.
Such as?
Dick pill. Just always okay. Go to dick pill.
So what do? You go around town, you gather up all the dick pills you can find, you have your buddy test them for Osterine, and then you find the one with Osterine, and you send it to USADA? Like, probably, is that what you do?
Probably something like that, yeah.
Okay.
Or, you
I'm
know,
trying
you,
to understand or, if I ever pop for Osterine, what
or,
I should
or,
do.
Or you just find something else in the world that's kind of legal for most people that would cause Osterine to show up, and you just use that. Yeah, I got an inhaler. Yeah, my inhaler has inhalers have steroids in them? Oh, I never knew that's what steroidal meant. Oh well then, I'm totally sorry. And they'll be like, well, okay. I mean, obviously the man wouldn't lie about using an inhaler or lie about using Viagra. So you know, you go out there, you'd be like, oh no, I had my kidneys were hurting, and I heard if I took this weird ginseng shit from China that my kidneys wouldn't hurt, and people are off. Nobody would ever lie about their kidneys being in pain. Good for you, young man. You're fine.
Yeah. I kind of got the impression from Lawler just listening to him on various shows. He was kind of fed up with the UFC. And I don't really think he cares that much, was my initial impression from all of it. Was like, I'm not even going to bother fighting this. I haven't fought in a year. I'm fighting in a weight class. I'm too big. I'm getting older. I'm a mid-level guy anyway. Like, is it even worth it? How much more do I want to fight in the next 2 years? How many times did he fight in the last 3 years? Two or three times? You know what I mean? Like, I just didn't feel like he gave a shit.
Yeah, he probably doesn't on some level. There's probably, like, I don't know, probably like armchair psychologist shit. But like, there's probably some part of him is like, all right, this is my way out. Like, I can you know, maybe he doesn't want to fight. I don't know what he's going to do. I don't want to do pro wrestling, but you're not a really huge guy by pro wrestling standards. You're old, and you've had a drug failure. You're not quite like WWE going, ooh, can't wait to get this guy.
True. That is true. Maybe he can get out of his jail, go fight in Ryzen or something. He can be a wild maniac there.
God, he'd fit in perfect. They'd love him. He'd do real well in Ryzen, actually.
Probably, yeah.
He'd love his wacky entrances and, like, clap and, like probably stop in the middle of a fight and do break dancing, and people would be like, oh, yeah, that's awesome.
Speaking of lawyers and attorneys, I know that's one of your favorite topics. UFC lawyers have filed a motion to dismiss Mark Hunt's lawsuit against them for racketeering, fraud, negligence, breach of contract, and other complaints due to Brock Lesnar's failed USADA drug tests in relation to UFC 200. We all know the backstory there. What exactly does that mean? Or is this just standard operating procedure? You try and get the lawsuit dismissed right off the bat? Is that normal?
Yeah, I mean, it's 101, first thing you do. Usually happens, you get sued, and then you file an answer, and your answer basically says, that's not true, I deny that. And then they do discovery, everybody turns over their evidence, then they would go to a motion for summary judgment, where one side would say, Your Honor, if you look at this, there's so much evidence here that there's no way a jury would ever go against it, so we don't even have to go to the jury to use rule right now. And the judge sometimes will be like, yeah, look at that, you got the bloody glove and the knife and the shoe print and everything. Yeah, OJ's guilty, just kill him. It doesn't really work in criminal court that way, but fine. But and then if the judge denied the motion for summary judgment, you'd go to trial. But the very first thing you do of all of this is you'd file a motion to dismiss. Even before you say yes or no, I admit or deny all this, you'd file a motion to dismiss. And they usually come in two forms. One is the court doesn't – this is an improperly filed lawsuit because of jurisdictional reasons or something like that, or there's a defect in the complaint itself. Like, it's just not written right. Or you file a motion to dismiss based on the fact that there's no way, even if you look at all the evidence possible in the light most favorable to the defendant, you wouldn't win this. So just, this is wrong and you're wasting our time. And then it always gets denied. Every judge just says, no, I'm not going to dismiss the complaint. There's something here. And then you move on. So it's 101, and I should have shut the fuck up like 5 minutes ago.
Okay. In other news, former UFC fighter Terry Adams.
The timing on that might be shady. I don't know the schedule. Usually you get 28 days or 60 days to file a motion to dismiss.
Okay.
And usually everybody waits till the very last moment because that's how lawyers are. And if that happens to be like this week, fine. If not, are they like, did they do this deliberately just to kind of remind
mess with him?
Yeah, like it's little things like that do happen, and they are effective. You know, Hunt goes, I'm tired of this. I know I'm not going to win. Shut up. Or he gets really angry and does something else stupid.
It was probably just like an accident, like when Vince McMahon sent CM Punk his pink slip on the day of his wedding. It's probably just a coincidence.
Hey, you know, life is full of coincidences. What are we if not a series of coincidences?
That is true. In other news, I was saying former UFC fighter Terry Adam is going to need a lawyer because he made the news this week for jumping out of his friend's car and running into traffic and smashing his face into oncoming cars and buses. Police had to restrain and arrest Adam, then take him to the hospital with serious injuries. This seems like some questionable decision making on Adam's part. And would you help defend him in a court of law?
Oh, sure.
And what would your defense sound like?
He has mental health issues. These aren't the actions. This isn't like somebody going around and being a jerk and a jackass. Like, this to me screams, I have chronic traumatic encephalopathy, or I have some sort of, I mean, seriously, like, you're running around, you're headbutting car windows. You don't do that.
Yeah, he broke. Did you see the pictures?
Yeah.
Like, he's smashing a bus window with his head.
Yeah, like
I feel like I could headbutt a window over and over again and it wouldn't break.
No, I'd knock myself out the first time. And he's out there doing all this, like, it's clearly, to me, this is a psychotic break type of behavior. Like, either it's crazy drugs.
Or he was gimmicked up, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but even if your excuse is it's crazy drugs, that still works to, you know, at least mitigate some of the damages that you would suffer. Because, again, this is not somebody engaging what would essentially be a one-man form of hooliganism. Like, this is a guy that's just, he needs help. He doesn't need to go to jail. He needs help.
Yeah. He was he's the one who took that spinning wheel kick, right? From Barbosa?
Yep.
Adam? Yeah. Moving along. I know you were a fan of this. Dominic Cruz on the Joe Rogan Experience. Any thoughts on his interview there?
I loved it. I thought Cruz just showed an intelligence beyond most people. Like, really, in general, because I saw a guy that very clearly understood, like, what his limitations are, and I think that's a really smart person, and when he's talking about the fight, he immediately was like, oh, this happened, and this happened, and this happened, and I know why I lost, and I did lose, he beat me, he threw a line like they've had 30 rounds of practice on me. They're going to get it eventually, which is kind of defensive, but it's also kind of like him reminding himself of, hey, look, it took them this long to figure out one way to do it. All you have to do is change a little bit, and then they're going to go back to another 30 rounds. And between that and the honesty about his injury times five and everything that he's just kind of been through, I'm just like, this guy really thinks about his fighting in ways that's very technical. He talks about how he initially developed his style to get off the center line. He's like, I know I can't hurt them. I'm smaller. Hey, why is everybody doing it this way? And everybody's saying you're not doing things the right way, and him just never admitting that, saying, no, I know this is right. Like, that's a really intelligent and ballsy thing to do. Because, you know, if everybody in the world is always telling you when you box, you got to keep your hands up at all times. If that's, like, day one, boxing lesson, like, the first thing they teach you is not to punch, is how to hold your hands in front of your face. And he's saying, no, that's wrong. I can do different. Like, that's, you know, Galileo and Copernicus territory, where people, you're like, you got to be really sure, because especially when you think, like, he's coming up and he's developing this style, and at one point he had to be doing his style and essentially telling a coach, somebody who obviously has more, in theory, experience, no, you're wrong. I figured out something better. And that's, you know, there's no guarantee on that.
Yeah, you're a bigger Cruz fan than I am. I mean, I like him. I think he's an amazing fighter. But I just feel like I've heard so much about his injuries, and he went on about his ACL for 45 minutes. And I'm like,
I thought that was
awesome. I've just heard that interview like, I don't know, five or six times, but. My one biggest takeaway was his thoughts that he was definitely going to get a rematch with the winner of Dillashaw and Garbrandt, and he was basically going to sit out until the end of the year. I found that kind of interesting, because granted, he fought three times last year, but he's going to probably have to wait until, you know, like December for another fight, another year layoff. And it's like with the bad knees and the bad – he's got the plantar fasciitis in his feet. It's like you might want to take another fight against somebody and not wait a year to fight Cody Garbrandt again.
And you know what? He might take – decide, okay, I need it. Otherwise,
who knows what the fuck the landscape will be come December. Well, do you know what I mean?
Well,
like, there could be a guy who goes on a 2 or 3 fight win streak who's going to be the hot guy and leapfrog Cruz. Like, there's no guarantee he's going to get that shot.
I think it's safe for him to assume, because again, he kept talking very candidly of I had to learn to be comfortable on camera. Like, I thought that was really smart when he was, like, starting out. He realized it's more than just fighting. I have to be able to be good at this thing. I better work on it. And he did work on it. And you just see his mindset with, like, the knee, like, how he worked on it, what he was doing. And you just see a guy very, very calculating.
I agree. I just think sometimes he miscalculates. Moving along, we've got some upcoming fights coming up. That were just recently announced in the last few days. I know that you wrote an article on this one. Jorge Masvidal versus Damian Maia has been added to UFC 211 on May 13th in Dallas. It's going to be a tough fight for Masvidal, man, who typically fought at 155 for most of his career, I would say. He essentially requested a big fight after his win over Donald Cerrone, and even offered to bet Dana White $200,000 that White could not find anyone who could beat him. I think White found somebody who can beat him in Damian Maia.
Yeah, no, it's I think he's pretty lucky that Dana's not going to hold him to that one, you assume, because like, yeah, I got 200 grand. First of all, that's kind of an odd number. Like,
right.
Like, that to me is him saying this is exactly how much money he has saved up in his life.
That's a good amount of money for Jorge Masvidal, I feel like. Maybe it's his house.
He's putting his house up. It could be, because otherwise, like, if you had, like, $1 million, you'd be like, I will bet you 100,000. Like, you should do 50 or 100. You wouldn't go to 200. You go to like 50, 100, and then 500. Nobody stops at 200. And so, but yeah, and then Dana gave him Damian Maia. And, you know, that's not, that's kind of like saying, yeah, I'll get in bed with this really attractive chick, and then it's Medusa. So, yeah.
Yeah, I like Maia in that fight easily, but that's just me. Also, it's kind of interesting Maia took it, because for the last few months he said he was just going to wait and bide his time and try and get the next title shot at 170, because he's right there in line, too. He's been on a tear recently, especially that Condit win was so impressive, where he just destroyed Condit in the first round. So kind of interesting he took this fight. Maybe he thinks it's a safe fight. It's not until May. He's got a couple months to train for a smaller guy who probably can't match him at all on the ground. So kind of a smart fight for Maia. Very risky fight for Masvidal. But if Masvidal wins it, he's probably one fight away from a title shot at welterweight. So interesting fight.
I think Masvidal's got everything to gain and nothing to really lose, because – you know, he's
going to get his ass handed
but
to him.
He wasn't really a money player at all.
Mm-hmm.
And he's barely kind of on the blip on the radar now with Cerrone.
Right.
So
right.
If he loses to Maia, he's back where he was before. And if he beats him, he's entered into money territory. So for Masvidal, yeah, this makes all the sense in the world. And for Maia, he could have just looked at the landscape and said, I got to fight. I'm going to have to stay active, because there's no guarantee I get the next title shot, even though it would make sense. He would be the first guy he would go to, except for George St. Pierre is back all of a sudden. Conor McGregor is this wild card where you never know what they're going to do with him.
Right.
So you might just say, all right, I got to stay active, and this is a fight that will truly put me over the top.
No, I agree. From Maia's standpoint, it makes sense. I don't want to say it's a gimme fight, but it's a fight he should win. Interestingly enough, I just pulled up the rankings for welterweight. If you had to guess what Masvidal's ranking in the welterweight division is right now, what would you guess?
Number 9.
He's ranked 6th in the welterweight division. Like, I was shocked to see he was that high.
I mean, Jake Ellenberger and Donald Cerrone are good wins, but one of them is a lightweight and one of them is a failed prospect.
Right. I agree 1,000%. It goes Thompson, Robbie Lawler, Maia. Condit is still ranked 4th. Then Magny is 5th. Then Masvidal at 6th.
Magny might be low there. I would have like Magny above Masvidal.
Magny's 5th. Masvidal's 6th.
Oh, okay. It's still, like, they shouldn't even be close. Whatever. Who cares?
Yeah. It's just interesting that, I don't know. The welterweight division might not be what it used to be. But that's a topic that we could get into another day. Another fight coming up is Glover Teixeira versus Alexander Gustafsson. This will headline UFC Fight Night in Stockholm on May 28th. So again, two, you know, top ranked light heavyweights that have gotten title shots and lost. And I mean, Gustafsson's ranked 2nd, Glover's 3rd. Depending on Jones's situation, the winner of this could be in line for a title shot against the winner of Johnson and Cormier. But you would guess Jones would get the first shot, and these guys are going to be shit out of luck.
If the idea that both these guys could be that close to a title shot, it's kind of sad. Like, they're not good. They're both like they both had their shot at the title. And they both have been clearly just, nope, you're not going to get it, no matter who's any of these bigger guys who are a champion. They've both been around for a while. Like, they're both clearly on the second half of their career, and yet they're ranked that high. What the hell is going on? Like, maybe Dana really does need Mika Sirkunov, and he really is tracking him down for dinners, because he sees how bleak it is.
It's pretty bleak at light heavyweight, man. It goes, obviously, Cormier's champ, then Rumble, Gustafsson, Glover. Ryan Bader is ranked 4th. He might not even work for the company anymore. Jimmy Manoa is 5th, Shogun 6th, Corey Anderson 7th, OSP is 8th, Volkan Ozdemir is 9, and Ilir Latifi is 10.
I have no idea who Voltron. Oh, yeah. We just saw him.
Little Nog is 11.
Shogun is still in the top 10.
Little Nog is 11. Yeah. In 2017.
I know. It's just like there's so many of those names. And yeah. One guy might not work in the company. Shogun is the most overrated man ever at number 6 or something. It's just, what an embarrassing shit. And you know what, though? You get John Jones in there, and I feel like it's more that some of these guys shouldn't be ranked so high because they're not that good. Whereas, like, I feel like OSP should be above Shogun just because I think he's younger and fresher. And when he wins right now and looks good, it's a sign of that he's going to be doing that for a while. Whereas Shogun, if he wins, it's going to be like, oh, look, I don't know how he pulled that one out of his ass. So, that doesn't matter. John Jones will come back, and we'll all watch because he talks shit with old Daniel Cormier. It'll be fun.
You know what's scary about OSP, though? He's, like, thought of like a prospect in the light heavyweight division. He's 1-4 in his last 5.
Holy fuck.
You know what I'm saying? And he's still ranked in the top 10. Like, that's how shitty that division is. He lost to Glover by rear naked choke. He beat Rafael Cavalcante by decision. He lost to Jones. He got knocked out by Manoa. And he just lost to Volkan Ozdemir, who still doesn't have a Wikipedia page. anyway, it's funny because I would never normally look at these things, and then I do it on this show while we're trying to do the show, and then I laugh. Then we also have a third big fight. Two former number one contenders for the women's strawweight title will go to battle at UFC 212 in Brazil on June 3rd. That's the fight with Aldo versus Holloway, that big card in Brazil. And this one's going to be Claudia Gadela versus Carolina Kowalkiewicz. Again, you know, probably two of the top three women's fighters in that division scheduled to fight again. Scheduled to fight. So, they're ranked 1 and 2 in the strawweight division. So, another good fight there, another top contender fight. I think I favor Gadela in that one.
I mean, maybe. I just see it's like, okay, they're still there, but they're not even close to Joanna. Like, they're not even in the same ballpark. I don't know. Like, the women's strawweight, like, yeah, I guess this is an important fight, but I don't see Rosnah Muniz or somebody like that. So, somebody who I think is, like, at least it'll be a little different.
Yeah. I think Rose is fighting Watterson, so it's possible.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
One of those two will, it's actually probably likely that one of those two will jump the line. Or maybe you do a mini tourney. Yeah, you have the two winners of both those fight, and then the winner will fight Joanna or something. But the matchmaking is they're doing the most elite fighters in those divisions against each other. So you can't be too mad at it.
Yeah, I don't really care. I mean, I'll watch it. So.
Yeah. Also, there's a rumored fight for UFC 212, which I would actually kind of like to see. It hasn't been signed or, like, really confirmed, but it looks like things are leaning that way for Eddie Alvarez versus Dustin Poirier, which is a fun fight. You think Alvarez would be the favorite in that, but it would be a good action fight, I would think.
It's kind of funny because, like, this is, in some respects, where Eddie Alvarez should be. Like,
right.
Like him being in, like, the world champion top of the line spot, I don't know. Like, I feel like the way his career has gone, he's more of the just you're going to fight other really, really, really good tough guys, but you're never going to be in the spotlight fight. This is a tough-ass fight, and it'll be really good and entertaining, and then we'll all go back to forgetting about Eddie Alvarez. That's just the way the world's supposed to be. We're not supposed to give a shit or remember Eddie Alvarez because he's supposed to be known for not being known. And so the only way for that to happen is for him to win all these fights but never get a title shot. Yeah.
Okay. This weekend we've got two shows. One doesn't matter too much. The other one's pretty important in UFC 209. But on Friday, March 3rd, we have Bellator 174. Has a nice ring to it. From the Windstar World Casino in lovely Thackerville, Oklahoma, which seems to be a place they run a lot now. The card is headlined with the inaugural Bellator women's featherweight title fight between Marlos Kunin and Julia Budd.
Fucking Indian casino in the middle of Thackerwood, Oklahoma. That's the saddest place in the world to be. Nothing. Yeah. Nothing but memories and hopes are there to die. That's all that happens in Thackerville, Oklahoma's India casino, which is just people chain smoking and scratching lottery cards and using up all their Social Security money.
Hey, they earned it, right? Kunin is coming off a loss. And Bud is coming off a win over Arlene Blenkow. So two deserving women's contenders here going at it for the first ever featherweight title in Bellator history.
Hey, at least Bellator's got women who are at that weight fighting for their belt.
True.
That's an improvement. Plus, I like Kunin. So.
I know you like Kunin, and granted, she's probably the second best 145er ever behind Cyborg. And she's a real fighter, but it's like, again, she's coming off a loss in Bellator on TV that everybody saw. But it's like nobody cares. Nobody's paying attention anyway, so it doesn't really matter. But at the same time, it's like another shitty title fight that doesn't make a lot of sense, doesn't really – get my juices flowing over here. On the undercard, there some names. It's a saying. On the undercard,
are you an orange or something? That's awesome.
Yes. I'm gonna juice some oranges after this.
Juice yourself.
That's even weirder.
You're the orange.
Okay, got it. I didn't know if that was a Trump reference or what was going on.
No, it was the first brew I thought of.
Orange juice is good. I drink orange juice semi-regularly. On the undercard, we've got Mike Rhodes, Brandon Gertz, Joe Timanglo, and Cody Pfister is making his
debut. I hardly know her.
I believe. I saw an article the other day saying Cody Pfister plans to create an MMA promotion that's going to overtake his current employer, Bellator, and his previous employer, the UFC. I'm not sure if Pfister has a lot of promoting experience, but I like his chances.
This is so sad. He thinks he's going to start a fight promotion. It's so weird. Like, you wouldn't do this in any other sport where you'd be like, you know, on one team or whatever and being like, I'm going to build up and be better than everybody's ever been a team. Like I'm gonna shit on everybody, but right now I desperately need your help for me to eat food tomorrow. So, like, and the fact is that it's extra sad because nobody gives a shit. Nobody's scared. Bellator, like Scott Coker and Dana White probably called each other up in a rare moment and just both said, did you see what he said? Yeah, and then they just laughed for like a half an hour, like only titans of industry laugh. And they don't give a shit. They're probably sitting there going, don't do it, kid. No, you need that $500. You're not getting another fight for a couple months there. No, don't. Oh, you got posters made. You don't even have a venue booked. You have no idea what you're doing. Oh, you can't just sign fighters if you don't have, you don't even have a cage. I know. It's tough to be a promoter. Yeah, we told you to save us $500. No, I'm sorry. No, your daughter's just going to be hungry. Not my problem. Bye.
I question Pfister's business plan. On Saturday, March 4th, in Las Vegas, Nevada, we have UFC 209. there's some good fights on this show. In the main event, we've got Tyron Woodley versus Stephen Thompson in a rematch for the welterweight title. This is a rematch from their draw at UFC 205. Woodley has been making a lot of news about suffering the negative effects of racism from MMA fans and the UFC itself. He even claimed that he was the worst-treated champion in UFC history. In my mind, it's really kind of time for Woodley to step up and have a big win here and shut everybody up, and prove that he's the best welterweight in the world, whether or not he is, and whether or not he can actually accomplish that against Stephen Thompson remains to be seen. But it's kind of time to put up or shut up.
What is he thinking? What is this? There's never been any indication that anybody cares about you ever. Why do you think like you should have just now I've broken through that glass ceiling. See, I had all this groundswell support. It's like, no, if there's a glass ceiling, you're still on the floor. You're not climbing a ladder. Nobody even cares. Nobody's ever done anything to tell Tyron Woodley, yeah, we really like you. He thinks all the fans are racist. He thinks that the whole world thinks he's boring, and then he just insults and yells at people. He's never seen anybody say, yeah, you're awesome. Why would he think it would start all of a sudden?
Again, the thing with Woodley that gets me is he didn't even deserve that title shot. Like, I don't care what people say. It's like, if you look back, I want to say his signature win. Obviously, his signature win now is the Lawler knockout to win the title at 201. But, like, his signature win was beating Carlos Condit when Condit's knee blew out. Do you know what I mean? Like, that was his big win. Then he loses to Rory McDonald, unanimous decision. He beats John Young Kim. Then he beats Kelvin Gastelum by split decision. Gastelum missed weight. Weighed 180 pounds.
Jeez.
Woodley wins the fight by split decision. It was a close fight. It wasn't like he destroyed Gastelum, who had this terrible weight cut. And then he takes 18 months off and gets a title shot based off a split decision win over a fat guy. It's like, what? It's like you're not that impressive. You're a very good fighter. You're elite. But you're, I don't know. Like, what? How do you expect to be treated as champion after that? Is he treated any worse than any other champion that got a title shot, not deserving of it, and then in his first title defense gets a draw, then wants to fight somebody else immediately? He's talking about Bisping coming down in weight. He wants Nick Diaz. He wants GSP. But he doesn't want to fight the guy he just had a draw with. And then you complain about the fans and call them all racist, and then you wonder why you get booed occasionally. It's like, come on, dude.
What's great is that you know deep down he really does think everybody's just a racist. Like, he's just so deluded. He can't maybe open his mind to the possibility that, you know, he got some shortcomings. So he's just sitting there going, no. Fuck it. They're all fucking racist.
I mean, I'm not like a psychologist or anything, but a way to not get people to like you is by calling them names and calling them a racist. Like, that's not going to get you over with fans. Like, win some fights and kick some ass and, you know, cut some promos and challenge guys bigger than you. And, I mean, I don't want to say Dana White was spot on when he called him a crybaby and to be more like Conor McGregor, but there's something to that. After you take 18 months off and bide your time and get a title shot after a split decision win, it's like, I don't know. Some of what he says, there's probably some truth in it. There are racist people in the world. That's how it is. But his popularity isn't based on his race. It's based on how he fights, the wins he's had, and how he behaves in public.
And his race. But yeah, he's just, if anything, he's been a benefit of his race. Like, if you ever want to see basically, like, affirmative action really take place in the world, you can almost point to him. Because there's so many people that have done so much more to get where he's at, and he's actually done so little other than everybody looks at him and says, yes, he's got look, he's got a win here or there. It's really good, and he can. We feel like he's got all this potential, but he's never actually shown it or proved it. So, you know, screw him.
Then, on the other side of the cage, we've got Stephen Thompson. It's possible this could be his last shot at a title at welterweight. It's like the way that division moves and GSP being around and Nick and Nate and Connor. If he doesn't pull the trigger here in this fight and get the win, whether however he does it, by decision or knockout, whatever it might be, he might not get there again. So this is a big fight for both of these guys. And the winner of it will probably be in line for a big fight against a big name as well. So very important fight for both guys. A competitive fight, obviously, based on the first one. A lot of people call that first fight a classic, which I didn't really see it as. I thought it was not one at all.
But I just watched it again. It was
the fourth round. The fourth round was amazing, awesome round. Thompson showed a lot of heart. He was in that guillotine. Somehow he gets out. He gets on top. Very competitive. But again, people act like Thompson, and granted, I think he's a dynamic striker, but he's not always hyper aggressive, where he kind of points and he stays on the outside. He'll throw some kicks, and it's like if you block his head kicks, he doesn't have a lot of exciting finishes besides a few head kick knockouts, which I'm granted is exciting, but at the same time, I think he's got this rep for being this super fun fighter to watch, and I just don't think he always is. But again, do you see this fight going much different than the first one? Do you think either guy's made a big adjustment from the first fight? And who do you like?
If there's one adjustment that could be made, because it would come from Tyrone Woodley, and it would be for him to use his wrestling more. Because he used it in the first round, and it kind of half caught a kick but got it down. And it showed real quick that when he was on top, he could do real damage to Wonder Boy. And more than that, Wonderboy didn't have a real good, you know, defensive scrambling game from the bottom. He just kind of accepted a position.
Right.
And he did well, but it seemed like he was playing jiu-jitsu too much. And then on the feet, it's still the same. It's how long can a karate guy just hit a point before a boxer lands a really big punch? And we see it seems about 15 minutes seems about how long it takes. So I'm going to go with Tyrone Woodley.
Yeah.
Also, he's one of my boys. And
yeah, it sounds like it the way you were just talking about him.
Yeah, you know, I could hang out with him if I wanted to.
You're very honest with your boys.
Yeah, well, you know, you gotta keep it real. You know.
Yeah, you gotta respect that.
Yeah, damn right. You know, it's. I'm a straight G.
All right, so you like Woodley. Again, I think it could go either way, but I'm going to take Thompson. I think Thompson probably, you know, won the last couple rounds of that fight and could maybe, excluding the fourth, obviously, where he got destroyed, but I'm going Thompson. I'm racist.
Fuck Thompson, too, because his nickname is still Wonder Boy. He looks really, really young. But he's like 33 or something, and your dad is still your main coach. You're a 32, 33-year-old grown man who goes around calling himself Wonder Boy as your dad coaches you.
Well, sometimes a nickname just sticks forever, doesn't it?
His dad gave him the nickname on purpose as part of a marketing ploy.
He does come out to the Wonder Boy.
Yeah.
What's that? Fucking Jack Black. What was his band? Can't think of the name of the band, but good song. Interesting song.
Yeah.
And Kate, can we call this a co-main event? Tony Ferguson versus Khabib?
Really shouldn't be.
Come on!
It is for me. For your average person, I think a real world title fight means more than a fake world title fight.
I'm calling this a co-main. So, this is for the interim
son of a bitch
lightweight title. which is odd. It shouldn't be for an interim lightweight title, but that's what we like to do with most fights now, make them interim championship fights. I guess the logic, the argument for this is we don't know how long Conor McGregor is going to be out because his girlfriend's pregnant. I'm not sure why he can't work and train when his girlfriend is pregnant. I didn't take a year off when my wife was pregnant. Neither of us did. She still worked too, but whatever.
You don't have hundreds of millions of dollars either.
No, I don't. I barely have hundreds of dollars, but...
Ooh, somebody's in the three-figure range. Fancy.
Anyway, this fight's... I do not like GSP versus Bisping, but I'm not a miserable prick. I love this fight. This is the fight between the two best guys at 155 pounds in the world, in the best division in the world, the deepest division. You've got one guy in Khabib who's this wrestling freak from Dagestan who wrestled bears as a kid and is 24-0 in MMA, never lost in his career. Then you've got a guy in Ferguson who's a badass in his own way and a more well-rounded fighter and on a great run himself going 8-0 in the UFC. It doesn't get much better than this. Like, I kind of felt this way about Rockhold and Weidman when they fought. Like, these are the two best guys in their primes going at it. And you don't always get this, whether there's injuries or timing, it doesn't work out. But this fight's awesome, and it's intriguing on a number of levels. The big question is going to be, can Ferguson negate some of Khabib's wrestling and beat him on the feet? Obviously, Ferguson, if you watch him, he's got that Darce choke he likes to use a lot, and he's got an active guard, and he'll throw up submissions. He goes for Kimuras and different stuff all the time. And on the feet, he's clearly got an advantage over Khabib, but it's like Khabib just seems like he can take anybody down, whether it's with a double leg, a single leg, trips, whatever it might be, he finds a way to get dudes on the ground and just punish them. So to me, the question is, can Ferguson stop Khabib's takedowns?
It's going to be interesting because Ferguson is a very, very unorthodox guy. Like, one of the things I noticed, and I think this could be telling, was that Tony Ferguson, a lot of times, when somebody kind of knocks him off balance, or maybe they go for a takedown, he'll do a front roll to get out of the position. And when Khabib fought, I can't remember who it was right now, Abel Trujillo, and he got the 22 takedowns in a fight and all that shit, there were a number of times when Trujillo was able to get out of the takedown by doing that exact same roll through. And the problem with Trujillo, he just didn't have anything else to offer. As far as him stopping the takedown, I think he'll be able to do something that people don't do, which is use funky movement and scrambles to get away from Khabib. And people will go, oh my gosh, he figured it out. But then I just think Khabib's going to go into pure Terminator mode and then just grab him still and throw him down.
Yeah.
And just Khabib him until he's a shish kebab.
So you're going Khabib?
Yeah. I think my new favorite fight ever is him versus Michael Johnson. Just watching him.
It was crazy.
Because the way he's just beating him and the way he's talking during the fight and this corner man saying, like, pay attention. He goes, no, I know. I already have this fight won. I don't need it. I'm good. I have this fight won. And the way he said it, and then just the way he went out there and just grabbed Johnson. He sometimes just use like one arm to slam him down, and he's just punching him, and he's timing it. He's just taking his time, and he's riding with his knee, and he's telling, you know, Tony Ferguson, no, you know this is it. No, I don't. Just give up. Just give up. You know this is my time. You know I win title. Just like, and it's totally like very matter of fact. Like, dude, you can't beat me. Just you should quit. You're in my way, and yelling at Dana. And it's just like, it was something I've never seen. And he's doing all these theatrics where his mind is He's clearly not paying attention to what's going on in the cage. That is so on autopilot.
Yeah.
And this is a sport where you can't go on autopilot, and he can't, and then he can turn his brain and just start talking shit to people. That, and if that dude shows up, nobody can get through that. It's a scary son of a bitch.
Obviously, the UFC would probably like to see Ferguson win and fight Connor as opposed to Khabib. Do you think the winner of this will get Connor no matter what?
No.
Okay. Well, because there could be a rematch or something.
I was thinking Connor might go down to 45 again just to stir up shit. Yeah. I mean, they could, I guess. I mean, it would make sense, but it's also Connor, and I feel like Connor's going to be I can't imagine him fighting. Maybe Khabib, because Khabib would have that mystery of this undefeated madman whose style is perfect to beat Connor, and everybody knows it. But, you know, Tony Ferguson, I love the guy. I think he's one of my favorite fighters to watch, but I don't think he's going to really, people are going to get all that excited for it.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's like both of these guys, if one of them can finish this fight, call out McGregor, call him a bitch, call him a pussy, whatever you got to do, say you're the money fight, cut a Nate Diaz promo, get yourself that fight with Conor McGregor. You know what I mean? Don't say, I'll fight anybody, I'm the champion now, I'll defend against anybody. Call out Conor McGregor. Make fun of his family, call his mother a whore, do whatever you got to do to piss him off and make him want that fight. Like,
oh, Khabib will do it for sure. Yeah, he'll just get right in there.
Basically didn't say anything after his last fight. Remember that? Like, said, thanks, I'm out of here. I'm like, dude, what the hell are you doing? Like, I get he's got that, like, blue collar sort of, I'm just going to work my ass off and grind it out, and whatever happens, happens. I'm not going to kiss anybody's ass or beg for anything. Beg for that fight. Make that fight happen. It's going to be the biggest payday of your career. You're going to beat the likely – I don't want to say likely because anything can happen in a fight. But if Ferguson somehow beats Khabib, you would think Ferguson would be the favorite in the McGregor fight. And obviously Khabib's probably the favorite in the McGregor fight right now, no matter what happens against Ferguson. So it's like, make that fight happen. You will beat Conor McGregor. You'll beat the biggest star in the sport. You'll have a huge payday, and you're going to be a giant star after beating McGregor. It could just be such a failure if either one of them just doesn't get real aggressive on the mic and call him out.
I think they will, though.
I hope so.
Khabib will for sure. And he's got that great line about there's only 6 million Irish and there's 100 million Russians. Like, that's so awesome because on the one hand, I'm thinking, is he saying, you know, to be the best in Russia just is so much more difficult? Or is he threatening to invade his country and he has the ability to make it happen because he's the baddest of all of them?
Yeah. I don't know. I'd like to see Ferguson win. I think they're both fun to watch in their own ways. Like, that Johnson fight with Khabib was freaking awesome. Just, like, how he would, like, control Johnson's, like, wrist and tuck his entire arm behind his back and then just punch him in the face repeatedly with his other hand. And just some of, like, the like, at one point he just had his knee, like, Khabib's knee was on Johnson's neck and he was punching him in the face. Like, Khabib's entertaining in his own way, but I feel like, I don't know, the build for Ferguson and Connor could be really special in a different way. And the other thing with Ferguson is he's got, in his last five fights, performance of the night bonuses.
Oh, yeah, it would be an awesome fight.
Yeah.
I like the idea of, like, if it's Khabib and Connor, that's genuinely, like, nation versus nation shit.
Yeah.
Because Europeans are so used to that anyways with football. And, like, in America, like, there, you would not have any patriotic shit. Like, no one would care. Connor would probably be the favorite because he's Irish. And, but I don't know, something about, like, watching countries war with each other for my entertainment. Makes me very happy.
Underneath Khabib and Ferguson, we've got Rashad Evans returning after a year layoff. He's going to make his middleweight debut finally against judo Daniel Kelly. Kelly's that Australian guy who's been to the Olympics for like four times for judo in Australia, which is so well known for its judo. This is Kelly's highest profile fight, and I think it's going to help determine if Rashad's got anything left at 37 years old here. Obviously, he's had those medical issues too, where if you remember the retired Tim Kennedy saying that Rashad Evans has brain damage. The whole Rashad story is kind of interesting because I think he's a guy historically who didn't really get the respect he deserved. I mean, he's a former light heavyweight champ, and he's had some good wins in his career. Granted, the last couple of years he slowed down a little bit, but he is 37. And he's making his middleweight debut, a division where most people thought he should have been his whole career. So it's kind of an interesting story. I don't expect it to be a wildly exciting fight. But there's a storyline here that could turn out to, I don't know, maybe mean something for somebody.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. Rashad, hey, he does seem to get the short end of the stick there historically. I mean, they're both kind of exact same point in their careers. And so, to me, if they're both kind of the broken, older version of what they used to be, well, when they were both in their prime, to me, Rashad be way better than Judo Jim here.
Absolutely.
So I would just have to pick Rashad for that. But I don't know. Maybe he does have serious brain problems. And pay. I mean, shit, if New York won't accept bribe money to get rid of it, that must be real. So, Nevada, you're now you're on the list, as they say.
Prior to that, we have Mark Hunt versus Alistair Overeem in a heavyweight title fight. Interesting, obviously, because Hunt's got that lawsuit out against the UFC that they're trying to dismiss while this fight's going to be happening. This is actually a rematch that probably nobody really remembers from 2008. Overeem and Hunt actually fought in Dream, of all places. And Alistair won that fight by submission via an Americana at 1 minute and 11 seconds in the first round. That was that streak where Hunt lost six straight and looked god-awful. Who do you like in 2017, 9 years later?
Mark Hunt.
You do? Okay.
Yeah. I think that they're both pure strikers now. Alistair has given up any pretense really of going to the ground. Back then, he had a little bit more jiu-jitsu in his arsenal, I think. But as pure strikers, they go in there. Yeah, Hunt can take Alistair's shots, and Alistair, there's no way he can take anything from Hunt.
Right.
I mean, nobody can take Hunt, and Alistair can't take shots from anybody. Like, he's got a weak-ass chin, and Hunt's gotten so much better at defensive stand-up and wrestling, so he's just going to go in there and just – he's just going to unload on Alistair. I don't think it makes it out of the first round.
Really? See, my thoughts on it were, would Hunt be able to get inside enough? Because I just feel – like, I don't know their reach, but I feel like Overeem's just so much, like, taller and can't say lankier anymore, but would have such a reach advantage that Hunt might have a tough time getting inside and landing that shot.
He will. He's going to have to walk through stuff. But Hunt, that's nothing new for him.
Right.
Like, you know, most fights he's going to be on the outside. So Hunt, above most people out there, he's already got a style tailor-made for dealing with the problems. And so he's probably got, you know, his movements to get inside. And plus, again, he can take one to give one, and Alistair can't.
Okay. Fair enough. Opening the show, we've got Funky Lando Venata taking on David Temur. Venata's looked good. I mean, he had that debut fight with Ferguson there where he rocked Ferguson a couple times and looked really good. Then he came off that that spinning heel kick win. So Venata's looked good. Temur, I think, is only like 6-1 in his career overall. Thoughts on that fight?
I like Venata a lot as a fighter. He's got a great style and he's entertaining, and I think he's kind of under the radar in a weird way for being a really exciting fighter, and I think he's going to kind of keep coming out a little bit more, and I hope he gets his just dues.
The prelim card on FS1 starts at 8 o'clock. There's not a lot on there. I mean, the one fight that, if you're going to watch any of the four, would probably be Mirsad Bektik versus Darren Elkins. They're both lower-ranked, I want to say featherweights. They might be bantamweights. I think it's featherweight. I think they're 12 and 13 in the featherweight division. So it should be a competitive matchup. A lot of people like Bektik and see him as this kind of up-and-coming guy in the featherweight division with some good wrestling, that sort of thing. But other than that, the prelim card doesn't have a lot of name value, I don't think.
I think Bektik will probably run into the wall that can be Darren Elkins, but it doesn't matter. On Monday, nobody's going to remember it. So no.
I mean, the one thing in Bektik's case is he's one of these guys who's undefeated. He's 11-0, and he is 5-0 in the UFC. And again, he's not fighting top guys yet, and he's had some sporadic times. He only fought once in 2014. He only fought once in 2016. So sounds like he's been injured a bit. I don't want to say he's like Khabib, but he's kind of got that sort of feel to him where he's got this wrestling game, but he ends up getting hurt a lot and might not be able to really live up to the hype because of the injuries. But time will tell. Anything on the fight pass portion? No.
No.
Okay. No. Andre Sukamthath? Not into it. That's all I got as far as MMA goes. Regarding stuff, I know you were a big fan of the Oscars on Sunday.
I really was. I really genuinely enjoyed it. I liked it. Setting aside what happened at the end, one of the greatest fuck-ups in the history of fuck-ups.
It wasn't as good as Steve Harvey and the beauty pageant, but it was good.
It's pretty bad. I mean, they were out there. They've gone through multiple speeches. That's really, multiple people gave an acceptance speech for an award they didn't win. Nobody could, figure it out in that amount of time. They had to announce the winner, have everybody walk up, everybody grab their trophy, and then multiple people spoke. And in all that time, nobody was like, oh, shit, that's the wrong movie. Somebody should have, backstage should have been like, what? And just ran right out on stage, right there. And so everybody, hold on, don't get too excited, here's the real winner. Setting aside all that fun, I thought the night was just really good. I thought Jimmy Kimmel was fantastic. I thought he did a really good job with the jokes and the humor. I thought that everybody people seemed happy. And I know it's stupid, and who cares if celebrities are happy, but it's absurd as it is that they have their trigger warnings and safe spaces and shit. To see people who are really genuinely talented and awesome at something, and they're finally in a place of peace, and it's like all the nerds in the art class or whatever getting there one day in the sun, and they all ham it up, and they're not sympathetic, but I don't know. I think it's neat seeing kind of different cultures of people. But to me, that's a culture of people, the same way that rednecks are and inbred Muslims are. So I liked it. And I think Viola Davis just had that pretty good speech, or a few parts are a little weird, but I just really enjoyed it. And I didn't think it was – I thought they did a good job as far as they knew it. They had to deal with Donald Trump, and – the jokes were funny. They weren't too low, and Jimmy Kimmel definitely played it up both sides and kind of attacked Hollywood for right to their faces for being shallow frauds. I thought that was nice. So yeah, I really enjoyed the whole show. Plus, I had a really good steak beforehand, so I was in a good mood.
Oh, that sounds lovely. Had you actually seen any of those movies nominated for awards?
Yes.
Which one?
Yes.
I feel like it's one, not multiples.
I saw Hell or High Water.
Okay.
And which, I mean, without having seen any of the others, and I'm not going to watch most of them, that movie is just out. That was one of the best movies I've really seen in a long, long time. Like, I was like, this is instant Western cowboy classic territory right there. So, that was awesome. But I didn't see La La Land. My brother said it was good, but...
That's like the musical, care. Right?
Yeah, like, I don't care. Like, it's like, oh, look, it was white people dancing at the time when things sure were better back then. We just all looked the other way with the black kids having a drink from a different water fountain. But we're singing and dancing. We're really pretty. Isn't this great? Yeah. Da-da-da-da-da. No, but turns out the only thing that Hollywood likes more than that is I'm a black man and I'm poor and the system's out to get me and I'm struggling. And then I get jerked off by my friend. And then I go to jail, and then I find my friend again when I get out. And we jerk each other off again. Like, how anybody couldn't see that coming? Going, oh, that's just got fucking Oscar written all over it. I mean, you got coming of age black gay men jerking each other off. This is amazing. We got to give an award for this one.
Well, the irony of it is all the backlash they got because of the lack of, you know, African Americans nominated last year. Then it was like, they overdid it this year to make up for it. Like,
I mean, every fucking movie had a black guy doing something in it. I was like, what the fuck's going on? Like, Denzel Washington's got shit. I'm like, what is this? Like, he filmed a play? Like, I didn't see this. And yet, you know, the black chick doing NASA stuff. And, like, it's all real stuff in some regard. But I'm like, all of a sudden, I was like, whoa, we just got smacked in the face by this. Like, this is weird. Like, somebody's overcompensating here. Somebody really figured, well, La La Land's gonna win, so we gotta make it look like we're not total racist.
The only one I saw, and I watched it during the actual Oscars, because I'm like, I can't really watch the Oscars because I haven't seen any of these movies. Like, back prior to Kids, I would try and watch some of this stuff and kind of have a feel like, oh, yeah, I kind of agree with that. That was a good movie. So we rented – didn't – fuck. Like, we went to Blockbuster and rented the tape. No, we got it, whatever, on demand, whatever we call that nowadays. Shit.
You rented it?
I guess, but Manchester by the Sea, which wasn't that good. I'm like, eh. I didn't really care about any of the characters. I watched it, and it was like, obviously you probably haven't seen it, but the whole story's depressing, and it's just like, this guy's a depressed loser, and no one likes him, and he got wasted and burnt his house down and killed his kids. So
it's a prophecy.
I don't have a fireplace, thankfully.
I meant for
you know
me.
What? You'd have to find somebody to marry you and have kids with. But
I'm just saying, I've got the drinking problem and the likelihood of setting myself on fire down.
Well, he, like, left to go to the store to get more beers, and when he came back, the house was, like, engulfed in flames, and it wasn't... Well,
that's an act of God, then. He got thirsty.
Well, he didn't, I guess, put the screen on the fireplace, but I was trying, like, that's like a classic, like, Anthony Jeselnik joke, where you'd be like... He'd say something essentially like, you know, I watched Manchester by the Sea. It was really well acted. Good story. I really think it should have won the Oscar. But I learned a lot from it. And one is I need to get a fireplace. Like that would be his joke. But anyway, Antarctica right now is 63 degrees. Does that concern you? It's a record high in the history of recorded temperatures.
No.
No, you don't buy global warming?
I don't buy anecdotal evidence on a day-to-day basis as having any indication whatsoever of climate change.
When, like, how many years in a row would we have to set the annual record high average temp for you to think there was a correlation?
Oh, if there's data in the aggregate, that's what I care about.
Right.
I want to see. It's not about whatever happened today or yesterday, because weather patterns are going to occur regardless of what's going on that way.
Sure.
So I would just be more interested in a long term study, and I think it has, you know, you have to be really long term, because weather's been around, you know, forever,
right?
And it is always changing, and we have no idea what it's changing from, because it could just be way more complex than we have any idea of.
Okay. Do you think? I mean, when do you determine that? How do you know? Is it 1,000 years? I mean, if you wait 100 years, it might be too late, right?
Well, again, I don't know how you would do it. Like, I feel like they can do some way of figuring out what the temperatures were like hundreds of years in the past.
Right. Well, I mean, there was an ice age. I mean, obviously, the temperatures changed drastically. But, I mean, obviously, I'm not a scientist or a climatologist or whatever. But it's like, I don't know. If people who – really smart people, people smarter than both you and I have studied this their entire lives – and it's like they're saying, you know what, some of this carbon shit we're pumping out and some of these gases are fucking up the ozone. I don't know. I tend to probably want to agree with them just based on them being the people who have been studying this forever.
No. Deferring to authority is horrible. I say this as a lawyer,
sure,
where like people are supposed to defer to authority.
No.
I ain't playing that game.
You think they're all just like paid off, or what do you think?
I think that I have the right to challenge them.
I'm not saying you should.
Go ahead. Well, Bill Nye did. But, people can know their stuff, but I do not like the argument of all these smart people say it, therefore it must be true. To me, that's different than...
But don't you believe that in general about a lot, like, if you go and you see three doctors and they all give you the same opinion, you're probably going to get the surgery, right?
That's possibly.
Fuck you guys. I'm going to skip the surgery. I'll be good.
I totally lost my – I had a really good analogy going too, and it's gone. It's just that to me, the difference between people and other assertions is the assertion is – something we are causing something to happen, and the proof is these people are all really smart and study it, and they say it's happening. Whereas if somebody says gravity exists, you don't say the proof is Einstein and Newton say gravity exists and we know that they're really smart and know a lot about this. You go, no, here's a mathematical equation, and then you just put it out there.
Sure.
And I don't feel like they're quite at the mathematical equation part.
Okay.
And since whatever is going to be happening would be a gigantic change. And plus, there's also the idea that the best way to overcome any of this is to move forward even faster. Because what's the most likely way that we're going to fix something? Because we can't just pretend like we're going to stop. We're going to say this is as far as society goes. No, we're going to keep advancing, and we'll eventually probably get the technology to clean up whatever's been happening. You know, if we can put somebody on the moon and start going to Mars, we'll figure out some way to put like a big ass vacuum cleaner out in the sky and make everything good.
Okay. And then what are you giving up for Lent?
Alcohol.
And how does Lent work? A couple weeks? What do you do?
How do you not know anything about, like, a basic religion?
I am very agnostic, I guess you could say.
No, I know, but, like, I'm not Muslim at all, but I still know Ramadan's 30 days.
See, I wouldn't even know that. I know Ramadan's like the holiday they're supposed to fast or whatever, but I don't know. I just never got into religion. It's just never been on my radar. It's not something my family really – like literally the only
–
hang on. Listen. The only time I've really ever been in church is when somebody dies or they need to be christened, and I feel super awkward because it's always like a Catholic church and people are shaking hands and going up and – getting the whatever, the Eucharist or whatever that is. Like, I have no clue, and it's like I've consumed my time with other things throughout the course of my life where, like, I know some Jewish people wear yarmulkes, and they have a menorah, but that's basically my knowledge of the Jewish religion. And maybe that's bad, that I don't know much about it, but to me, it's like religion. I don't want to say they're all the same because that's not right, but the idea is you're trying to live your life a certain way now so you get to heaven or the promised land or whatever it is. And it's basically the same theme amongst all of them, and that's just kind of my take on religion in general.
Yeah, but still, this is Jesus.
Like, I know Jesus. Like, he got crucified. Yeah, I've heard about him.
To me, I'm just thinking it's like a pop culture thing. Then again, maybe I'm overestimating it because I've been surrounded by.
Did you go to like a Catholic high school or something?
I was in Catholic school from preschool through high school.
Well, it's always been weird for me because everybody around here is Catholic in Massachusetts for the most part. I mean, there's other churches and things, but like I can remember when freshman year, it's everybody's not confirmation. What's the next one?
We have confirmation. That's it.
Isn't there? What do you do when you're like a freshman in high school? Is that confirmation?
That's
everybody's talking about it and going to CCD and stuff. And it was like nothing I ever did or saw. Like my dad was Catholic, but we never went to church or anything. And my mom's family was Protestant, but they never went to church. And it was just like it was nothing I ever did as a kid. And it's just like totally foreign to me for the most part. And it was like, am I going to pick up the Bible and read the Bible? Like, I tried to do that a couple times. I'm like, shit's boring as fuck and poorly written.
It is pretty fucking boring.
I'm like,
it's not all, it does have some of the greatest stories and narratives ever.
I get it. I don't know. I'm just not a religious kind of guy.
That's fine.
Yeah. So you're giving up alcohol? Is it 2 weeks? Was I right?
No, Lent is 40 days.
40 days.
It's actually technically 46. It's the period of time leading up to Jesus arriving to die. So it's like the 40 days everybody celebrates what's going on. Like, oh, we're all building up towards the big death and resurrection scene.
Okay.
And so yeah, it's 40 days. There's no meat on Ash Wednesday, which is today, and then
did you get the ash thing on your head?
I did, actually.
Wow.
I was going to meet my brother for lunch, and I could just walk in and do it. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going to do this. I'm going to intimidate people with my religion. I want to see how that feels.
Why do you do that?
It's just something to. It's like a blessing they give on that specific day because it kicks off Lent.
Okay, like I feel like you're. I'm confused because sometimes I feel like you don't buy any of it, and then other times you kind of do.
I buy in it to the degree I guess that I want it to be true at this time in my life. Yeah. Or
I'm not judging. I'm just.
No.
Because there's probably been about 20 articles about atheism on halfguarded.com. Granted, you didn't write them. But I kind of got the sense you were somewhat of that mindset, but no.
Well, I mean, first of all, I'll publish anything, especially.
That is true. That is very true.
But I am also, you know, dogmatic in my free speech beliefs. Like, I can't stand the idea of, oh, well, I disagree with that. I'm not going to publish it. What am I, a child?
Right.
No, I hate the echo chambers. The one thing ruining the internet. I want people to come to the site and see love and hate for different topics because we're important in the world. But I don't like it. Otherwise, most of the time I just take whatever I find to be the best joke. And if it's easier for me to joke about my religion or whatever because I know it, I'm just going to do that because it's just a thing, and I think people getting so uptight about it. It's just like, well, let it go. Stop worrying about, you know, people in Alabama if they want their kids to pray before fucking recess or something, because it's fucking people in Alabama. That's what they do. And stop worrying if people in New York City don't want to pray and are heathens or whatever. Like, that's great, too. It's all part of my, like, this weird love I have out there for, like, all these different cultures of people. I just fucking love it.
Yeah, no, I've got no issue with what anybody wants to practice. None at all. Because to me, again, all of them kind of have the same principle. It's like, what do you do now to get to the afterlife? How do you behave? What's the proper way to live your life on Earth now?
Jews are kind of different on that.
Okay.
Yeah, for the
most part. I mean,
Jews don't really have heaven.
They've got commandments or something, right? Rules you're supposed to follow when you're alive.
Yeah, as funny as enough, as the Ten Commandments come about, and they're actually a source of great joy for the Jews, because they loved God so much, and all they ever wanted to do was make God happy. And they're like, when God's like, these are my commandments, they're like, oh, this is awesome, thank you, now we know how to, like, do things to make you happy. So it wasn't, like, even necessarily, like, rules per se. It was like God being like, hey, these are the things that make me smile, don't you want to make me smile? And so that's kind of where that comes from. But I don't know, it's all hokum. I can't really argue otherwise. I can tell you why there's aspects of Christianity that make more sense than other religions on minor details, but I don't know. I mean, fucking most of the Muslims on the fucking planet are inbred.
Maybe.
We're all fucking doomed. It's 77% in Pakistan. 77% in Pakistan, 23% in Turkey, estimated over 50.
What was your source for that?
Some of these, they're actually various. No, I'm not fucking relying here.
I'm accusing you.
No, but like actual British medical journals and stuff.
Okay.
Like I started seeing these stories. I'm like, what the fuck? So like I'm going digging through, and it's like the Journal of Medical, you know, Reproductive Health and things like that, and they point towards the high levels of inbreeding, particularly amongst Pakistanis, is a reason for why all of a sudden they're seeing like a higher infant mortality rate, more mentally retarded and physically retarded children showing up. And
it's definitely not vaccines.
No, it could be, I guess. And then they realize it's like, oh my gosh, everybody here is inbreeding.
Okay, so how would they know that 77% of the population or whatever having
– they do their polls.
Right, but the population is 191 million, and if anything – if you know anything about Pakistan, like, it's so hard to even, like, figure out where people are in that country.
No. When I see the numbers, like, again, I'm reading the medical journal version of this stuff. I'm sure they have their data that if I could understand the data would make sense. But to me, what was really, really telling, and it really caught me off guard, is I made the comment on Facebook about this. And then I know the two Muslim people in my life, and one of them was on the podcast, actually, when I interviewed a Muslim. And like I brought it up, and all she did was like deflect, and it was like, well, you know, Jewish people do this too, and in Germany they want to pass a law to let brothers and sisters marry, and you know everybody knows about the South, and I'm sitting there going, hold on, wait a second, you're not denying the part where the majority of your ancestral country are inbreeding, and she kept going on and on. She never said that, no, that's not happening. She never even came close. It was always just, well, the Hasidic Jews do it. I'm like, okay, that's really weird, but there's 200 million of you in Pakistan. That's a lot of fucking inbred hillbillies, and they have a nuke. Oh, this changes everything. I really think this is a fucking eye opener, because like everybody I feel like keeps looking and going like, look, we see all these religions in the world, and they're not doing crazy extreme shit. Why is just this one religion seem to have an inordinate number of, you know, crazies coming out of it? And honest to goodness, maybe the answer is because they're all fucking inbred and they're more physically susceptible to this crap.
Yeah,
maybe they really are a gigantic, you know, group of fucking morons.
I was fascinated. You would think, just for shits and giggles, I pulled it up while you were talking, like infant mortality rates worldwide. You would think there would be Pakistan would be high if that number was true. I don't know if you read anything on that. But, I mean, there's a lot of countries with higher infant mortality rates than Pakistan.
Well, Pakistan, remember, is relatively well-developed.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, you know, Africa where there is poor and all that stuff. But, no, it was in England. There was an inordinate there's just a lot of way higher spike in premature babies and babies with deformities and stuff, and it corresponded exactly with the increase of the Pakistani culture. Plus, more than that, again, nobody was denying this to me.
Right.
That was just scary as hell. I'm like, oh my gosh, I bet her parents are related. Because why else would she be so defensive about it? If your parents didn't do it, you'd be like, yeah, I know, that's kind of weird. Like, thank goodness my family didn't do that. She's just like, that's not weird. No, that's nothing wrong with that at all. They do it too. Why are you picking on the Muslims? Why do you hate Muslims so much? Why does it always have to be about the Muslims? The Jews do it also. I didn't say also. I mean, they do it like, you know, they do it in addition to the Germans. I mean, I'm not going to talk about whether we do it. I'm not going to say yes or no on that. But I mean, hey, look in the South, they kiss their cousins. Blah, blah, blah. It's like, what? No, you're just supposed to go, yeah, it's really fucked up. You don't try to, like, call people on hypocrites because they oppose inbreeding. It's like a universal taboo, or at least it used to be. Like, this isn't imposing my religion or the concept of free rights or whatever. It's like, you don't fucking inbreed. This is against nature. Like, this is an abomination.
Yeah.
This has to be stopped.
Well, only if you know it. Yeah. How about this? I saw this story today. There's a potential 2020 presidential candidate who is saying she may be interested in running. And that woman is Oprah Winfrey. How would you like to see Oprah versus Donald for president in 2020?
Well, in fairness, Oprah was joking about it. I watched the whole clip.
Okay.
And I'm like, oh, what the fuck? Fuck. But she was, you know, basically making the joke that I thought you had to know stuff and be intelligent to have this job. But shit, I guess I could have done it.
So,
which is good. But I will say this. If Oprah Winfrey ran for president,
yes,
she would win in a fucking landslide.
You think people like her enough?
If Donald Trump can win because of his TV fame,
yeah,
and Oprah Winfrey is basically one of the most universally beloved people in America, if she just came out and was like, I'm a Democrat, because she'd have to be a Democrat, because if she was a Republican, that would alienate some Democrat voters who'd be like, oh my gosh, come on, you're like an Uncle Tom. They get upset about that sometimes. So she'd have to be a Democrat, but she'd be solidly Democrat, but it'd be on, like, you know, I hate guns because they kill black people. Like, she wouldn't talk about, like, abortion and things like that. She'd focus on things to make her, like, oh, okay, I get that. But she wouldn't be too crazy lefty because she's got appeal because she's still Oprah. And everybody likes Oprah. So long as she doesn't go too far, she'd win, like, every... I'd vote for Oprah. She's, like, the closest thing America has to royalty. It's Oprah. She does things and, like, she says, I like this product, and boom, it's a huge product. She goes, I like this doctor, I like this doctor, and suddenly she has launched the careers of, you know, Dr. Phil and all these people, which have also made untold hundreds of millions, and all she did was say, yeah, I like this guy. That's it. I like this guy, and that was enough for this man to become a multimillionaire. She's got power out the ass. How is this Oprah? Plus, you get a twofer, the first black woman? Holy shit. That would really, like, make Hillary pissed. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, I think you might be biased with the Chicago connection.
My dad was on her show.
Really? Like, in the crowd? Yeah. The audience, or is, like...
He was in the audience, yeah. But it was... They were doing a panel on something involving, I think, abuse of judges or something like that.
Huh.
And so they
this must be an old episode of Oprah.
Like, oh, it was on VHS. It was like early.
Yeah, I bet.
Like, it may not. Oprah may have just been local.
Okay.
Or the problem is I can never tell because I'm sure she started out local here and then obviously went national, but she always just stayed in Chicago and did the exact same show. I always felt like they just played the Chicago show everywhere, so I don't know when she went national. But regardless, it was on inappropriate behavior of judges or something like that, and they called lawyers in the area, and they had one or two guys on the panel, and then they had lawyers in the crowd, and my dad was planted there, if you will, and he had his question, and he got up and asked a question or said or answered a question from Oprah. So my dad was technically on Oprah as a guest once.
Huh, it's interesting.
Yeah, it's weird. Now he's dead. So, you know, that's that.
Line. Now you might be voting for Oprah for president. On that note, I don't have a lot more to bring to the table. Nope. Here. You got anything?
I have less than that.
Wow.
I was a fucking mess last week. I spent half the show crying for you to come back. I'm like, I don't know how to do this. Matt does this part. I don't know what's going on. But was there a show? Oh, shit. Like, I got through the whole show, and then I'm like, oh, shit, I forgot about the show with Fedor. Oh, yeah, it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Like, I was totally discombobulated.
I always put some notes together before, and as the week progresses, I've got that little notes thing on my iPhone, and I'll be like, all right, we should talk about Terry Adam. Because, like, I wouldn't have remembered off the top of my head to talk about Terry Adam tonight, but I'm like, that's a good story. I shouldn't say good. I mean, it's a sad story, but at the same time, it's interesting to talk about. But I would never remember that. It happened like 5 or 6 days ago, but I put it in notes in my phone, and that's how I remember.
Do you think that when Terry Adam headbutted the bus, yeah, that a bunch of Brazilians went by and went, hey, he's headbutting a big horse?
Not sure. They could have. They probably, maybe they called like an animal abuse hotline or something.
Hey, Aaron, you remember the part where I said that he gave the bus a carrot? Like, it's a horse? Like, Chael is a fucking out-and-out racist.
But I also like the fact that he kept pushing Ariel, and he's like, you believe that story, right? And Ariel's like, no.
Like, Chael was just, like, so obviously proud of himself. Like, look, you're a good one, right? You get that? Yeah. I know, like, look, guys, I know I'm doing a shit show here. And then I almost beat him. And fucking Chael Sonnen, it was basically about 2 minutes away in his entire career from not only being a middleweight champion, but from also being light heavyweight champion.
Yeah.
Because if he had survived that first round with John Jones, he would have won by forfeit.
Yep.
Which would have been the ultimate Chael Sonnen maneuver.
I wonder what's next for him. Like, who's he going to fight next? Like, the winner of Rampage and Mo, maybe? Like, I don't know.
I have no idea who the fucking middleweights are in Bellator.
I don't know either. But is he going to cut it? Does he want to make that cut and even fight at 185? You know what I mean? I see him just taking, like, fights with Rampage and stuff at whatever weight they want to do it at. Or yeah, Fedor. I could see him fight Fedor.
Oh, no, he's going to fight Wanderlei.
That's true, too. If
Wanderlei
doesn't pop for something and takes the fight, yeah.
Well, he's in Bellator. They don't have to worry about real testing.
True, but Wanderlei was failing before without real tests, and he was running out of gyms and all over. Remember? I mean, Wanderlei had issues before with the old testing that didn't really even count or matter.
Yeah, but practice makes perfect. He's good now.
All right. On that note, I think we should close out the show. This was MMA and Stuff on HalfGuarded.com, iTunes, Google Play, everywhere that's convenient. There's no excuse not to listen to this.
They're already listening.
But in the future, you gotta tell them about the next time.
Well, they had to discover where they found it this time.
Yeah, do that. You can find it anywhere. Thank you for listening. My name is Matt. That was Mike. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Aggressively, we all defend the role we play. Regrettably, times come to send you on your way. We've seen it all, Bonfires of trust, flash floods of pain. It doesn't really matter, don't you worry, it'll all work out. No, it doesn't even matter, don't you worry, that ain't what it's all about.
We hope you enjoy your stay. It's good to have you with us, even if it's just for the day. We hope you enjoy your stay. Outside the sun is shining, seems like heaven ain't far away. It's good to have you with us.
Hi everyone, I'm Mike Coughlin for HalfGuarded.com. If anybody's actually listening to this part, I'll be surprised. But I realized, as a practicing attorney, I should probably mention somewhere, like they do in the movies, the motion pictures, that everything you've heard is exclusive copyright and trademark and every other legal designation permitted within the United States or any other good country. HalfGuarded.com owns everything you just heard. Nobody else does. If they stole it from us, I will find you, and I will kill you, because I have a special set of skills. Also, anybody that's listening to this, email mike@halfguarded.com. I've never really used email, but I can get shit from it. If you've actually heard this, I'm not kidding, I will send you $5 via PayPal. I'm really curious to see if anybody in the world will ever fucking hear this. $5 for somebody. I'll probably do it for everybody that listens, unless it gets out of control, and then I'll just delete this part. But until that time comes, everything you heard is property of the HalfGuarded.com website. Bye. Oh, and yes, I'm aware that putting in a copyright thing at the end of a podcast where I've probably stolen music from somebody else is weird, but I promise to pay those artists if they ever request it. HalfGuarded.com. Go!